chapter 3.
What's the date?
Today is the 25th of February or the 16th of the first of Adar.
The what of the 15th of Adar?
16th.
16th.
I think Gibret, Tila, and Luriel last week kind of passed around the information that I'm going to post these notes on Torah Focus. It's spelled just like that up there, but it's all one word. It's not, and it's all in lowercase. TorahFocus.com. And you can go there sometime this afternoon, and I'll have the notes posted. I just started recording the classes, so this afternoon the recording probably won't be up, but within the next day or so the recording will be up. I'm reading from the Amplified Bible, my favorite rendition of this verse, chapter 3, verse 10. And it says, "For my determined purpose is that I may know him, that I might progressively become more deeply and intimately acquainted with him, perceiving and recognizing and understanding the wonders of his person more strongly and more clearly, and that I may in the same way come to know the power outflowing from his resurrection."
3:10.
I'm reading Amplified.
You say it's pretty close, but that don't even look close.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite elaborate here. Said that I may in the same way come to know his resurrection, which it exerts over the believers, and that I may so share in the sufferings to be continually transformed in spirit into the likeness, even to his death and his hope. That if possible, that I might attain the spiritual and moral resurrection that lifts me from among the dead, even while in the body. Okay, so the spiritual resurrection that he's speaking of is not the literal resurrection of death, burial, and resurrection. He wants to experience this in his personal life, as if he had been resurrected. And this is why I say sometimes, and I may have said it here, that what you will find often in some of the writings of Hakam Shaul or Paul is that what he does is he talks about baptism, but there's no water. Okay? So he's talking about a spiritual thing, not a physical thing. And so, especially when you're reading his writings, you need to get your head out of the world and get your head in the spirit and understand that there are spiritual realities that he's trying to discuss. Let's go to Yeshayahu or Isaiah chapter 11, verse 9.
What was it?
11:9.
What was the chapter?
Isaiah.
I always write the numbers down first because it's like I always, but this time I didn't even get catch the book.
His name in Hebrew is Yeshayahu. It's interesting because when you read it in Hebrew, it shows you the relationship to the prophetic relationship to God. So Yeshayah, Yah is God, and it's stick your finger in Isaiah where you're at. Let's go back to Genesis 2:2-7, I think it is. And it's not where I want to be. I'm going to be in 2. In 2:7, it says, "Then the Lord God formed man from the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of the spirit of life, and he became a living soul." This is the first time in Scripture where the two names are recorded together, Lord and God. In one of them is what is called the Tetragrammaton, that is the four-lettered word that is generally said as Jehovah, okay? And some try to say it Yahweh It cannot be pronounced. It's actually the tetragrammaton means this. Tetragrammaton in the Yud-Heh Vav-Heh that you see in Hebrew means that this that is an abbreviation to the 72-lettered name of God. Okay, so God's name, that Lord, that name in Hebrew is 72 letters long. It's not written that way because it's written in an acrostic and in an abbreviated form when it says Lord. And the Yud-Heh Vav-Heh, again, what's often said is Jehovah, or the Jehovah's Witness try to get their name. And then the word God here is Elohim. So what this is a combination of the two words. The Lord, the word Lord, means the God of mercy. God is Elohim, and it means the God of strict justice. Okay, so it's important here that you see that this is a description of the creation of man. Man cannot live in a world of strict justice, absolute justice, or a world of absolute mercy. You have to have both rules in order to live. Okay, so Yeshayahu is Yahu, is that he's related to the God of mercy or to the side of mercy. Okay? So remembering what we read in Philippians, that I may know him, my determined purpose is to know him. And it says in Isaiah 11:9, they will neither harm nor destroy on my holy mountain, for the earth will be filled or full of the knowledge of the Lord, as the sea is full of the water. And on that day, the root of Yishai or Jesse will stand as the flag or the banner for all people. The nations will seek him, and his place of rest will be glorious. And on that day, the Lord will extend his hand a second time to recover the remnant of his people from Assyria, etc. And then you can go to Habakkuk, which is very close to the New Testament, in verse 2, and or chapter 2, verse 14. What did you say? Habakkuk, H-A-B. Habakkuk 2:14. For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Now I'll give you two more verses and I won't make you chase anymore. Psalms 90 in verse 4. And these are all in the notes that I'll include on the website this afternoon. 90 and verse 4. For in your sight, 1,000 years are but as a day that passes, or a watch in the night. Okay?
I'm over here still trying to find a rotten turning page.
Is that the Jewish Bible you got? Or
yes, and it's not where it is.
It's not.
So I had to go look.
From now on, when I say the book, just go to the table of contents, okay. Because
this one's off.
No, that one's right.
Well, from me.
For here it is.
Yeah, yeah, it's different from...
I have it memorized in order. Well, that doesn't work
here. You need to use that one for study and bring a normal one for class.
That book, that one has it in its exact order, and there's a reason to that. We won't get into that this morning.
That's why but I quit using mine, because I can't keep up.
Okay, so being past Habakkuk, being past Psalms 90 and verse 4, let's go to 2 Peter 3:8. Yeah, this is the end of the Bible drill, last verse of the Bible drill, unless I think of something, which I may.
You will.
Well, I definitely will.
Second Peter what?
3:8. Beloved, do not let this one thing escape your notice. With the Lord, a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years are like a day. Okay, you need to understand this about Bible, Bible history, and Bible prophecy. A day is like 1,000 years, 1,000 years is like a day. So the question would be, if a day is like 1,000 years... You have two questions. Number one, what day is it talking about? And number two, what 1,000 years is it talking about? Okay? And so you can understand it like this. There is a day that is like 1,000 years. And there is 1,000 years that is like a day. The day in reference is Shabbat or the Sabbath. The Sabbath is like 1,000 years. The 1,000 years that it is talking about is what is considered the days of Messiah, Yemot HaMashiach. And that days, those days, are the 1,000 years. Christianity generally calls them the millennium. Okay? And so, when you start to look at this, what happened in the time of Yeshua, or Christ, Messiah, is that the ideology was there that the world would last for 7,000 years. Now, don't panic, okay? Because you have to understand that the process always moves from the lower to the higher. So we can see into the future at least to 10,000 years, and that's a whole nother discussion. The prophet Eliyahu, or the prophet Elijah, was the one who revealed to the world that the world would last for 7,000 years. What he fundamentally said and what he came up with, and this is from the Talmud, a source, that a Jewish source that is very common. He said that the world would last for 6,000 years in what we would call more or less like common history. So one of the things that I've tried to teach you and show you is that when Adam started out, his head, according to Jewish sources, his head was in the heavens, and his feet were on the earth. Okay, so that means that he was very spiritually minded. His mind was where God was, but his feet were on the earth. Then when he consumed the fruit of the tree of, it's literally like this, good married to evil. Can you imagine that relationship? Okay, that's the relationship that we live in the world today. It doesn't take anybody in this room very long to look at the history of people today and say they're confused. They think certain things are right, certain things are acceptable, and they're absolutely not. Okay, so I'm not getting into that, but nevertheless, so Adam fell. And in the process of history, if you read the Bible, if you read from, you know, Genesis to the present day, if you could say it like that, what you'll find is that you've had both. This is a relationship to Matthew 13. You don't have to go there. But Matthew 13 shows that the righteous souls would be planted right next to, or we should say it the other way, the unrighteous souls will be planted right next to the righteous souls, so that we will have to live in the middle of that confusion and drama. Okay, but we're promised basically for several different reasons that we will experience a time that will be the sabbatical reign of Messiah. Okay, so that means like the Sabbath. The reign of Messiah will be like a Sabbath day. And so that behooves us to understand Sabbath on a whole new plane, not this morning's discussion. Okay, but what you should come to know is that humanity will eventually lose its propensity toward negativity. Okay? So, in other words, the things that we're experiencing right now, one of the things that has to happen is, it says that the time of the Gentiles has to be completed, more or less. But at the same time, evil has to run its course. Then humanity's going to come to the realization that this is not the way to live. And this will happen about the beginning of the 7,000th year, when the year turns to 6,900 and whatever, okay? Now, just so you know, on the biblical calendar, not the calendar that you have on your refrigerator, the year is 5,784. Now, you can calculate that and say how many years before the year 7,000 begins, but that's not the issue, okay? And by the way, we're waiting for the year 6,000, because the year 6,000 is the beginning of 7,000 years, okay?
How many missing years?
We don't know. There are a lot of missing years. So that means that what she's asking is the number is 5,784, and some of the years have not been counted. Okay, there are a number of reasons why that happened. One of the reasons is every time the king, a new king, was anointed in Israel, not in the world, in Israel, the year, the calendar started all over, or it was jumped to the next year. Okay, so there are a lot of reasons for that. Every time the high priest died, the same thing. The calendar was altered. Okay. And the Jubilee was altered. Someone asked me the other night, when's the Jubilee? Nobody knows. And even the Jews, the Jewish people today, as much as they want, they think they know the Septennate, which means the seven-year cycle, but they don't fully understand or know either. And so many things are done in what is considered to be a conjecture, okay? But let's get back to the point. There'll be a period, a thousand-year period, that during this thousand years, we will experience peace, absolute peace, and peace in a way that we have never experienced it. But in our lives, I'm sure in your life, there were times or days when you experienced, let's say, a bliss or, you know, a wonderful day. And some days you would say, boy, I really would like to relive that day, you know, again and again and again, okay? So the Jewish scholars are asked, what will the days of Messiah be like? And basically their answer is, they don't know. But it will be like this. It will have three criteria. Number one, it will be like the most beautiful climactic day that you had. So, you know, when the sun was right, you know, the breeze was right, it was spring, you saw flowers or whatever that might have been, the day that you consider to be the most perfect day. That's one of the criteria for that day. The second criteria is that it will be like the most romantic session that you ever experienced. Okay, so that being, you know, those who are in relationships and have experienced that intimacy, etc. And the final criteria is that it will be like the most wonderful worship service you ever attended. Okay, so that when you blend all three of those criteria into one centric idea, the idea is that that will be the foundation for what it will be like in that period. Okay? So, again, the prophet Elijah was the one who came up with the idea that the world would last for 7,000 years. And it is written also in Jewish structure so that you will know and understand that it was a common idea in the time of Messiah, even. So, the one thing that I want you to understand, and the reason that I began in Philippians, is because it said that there will be a day that the people, all the people of the world, will know God like the waters cover the sea. So you understand that it's an analogy, it's a metaphor, right? So the amount of knowledge that will exist in the world will be like the amount of water that covers the earth. How much water covers the earth? Three quarters of the earth is covered with water. So let's suppose that right now, just as an illustration, only an illustration, that one quarter of the earth knows about God. What will happen in the 7,000th year period is that it will exponentially expand to three quarters, and three quarters of the globe will know God like the water covers the sea. This is something that, you know, most people, Christian and or Judaism, it doesn't make how sense how you look at it. And I'm not discussing the other religions, etc. That's not my thing, okay? You should know if you're in this class, I'm an isolationist. That means I don't study Buddhism. I don't study the Quran. I don't care about those. We know that this Judaism was the first, okay? The Bible that exists today came from the Jewish people, okay? God communicated it to them, etc. Christianity is branched or is a branch in some respects to Judaism. So many aspects of faith can be considered Judeo-Christian faith, all right? So now back to the idea that the knowledge of God will cover the world like the waters cover the sea. So again, we have about a quarter of the world that knows God, let's say, is a illustrative measure. And then eventually it will be three times as much as what we know today. Imagine what that would be like. If three quarters of the world, instead of, we don't even know a number today. We don't have a number of the people who really, really know God. Or who are, let me put it like this, really, really in love with God. Okay? And so that being said, when we talk about this idea, let's go to the book of Revelation for a minute. This is not a part of the Bible drill. Now I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. And then I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of the heavens from God, and it was prepared, or it was adorned as a bride was for her husband. Now read, go to 22. It's the flip of the page. And he showed me a pure river of water of life. It's not water. He just told you there was no sea. Where do the rivers run? Where do the rivers go today in our world? Where do the rivers go to? Here in our natural life? Huh? To the ocean, right? Okay, so they go to the ocean. If there's no sea, no ocean, where are the water going to run to? Okay, so there's no water. This is a spiritual thing, okay? So what is the water of life? It's the Bible. It's the Word. It's the knowledge of God, okay? and it's as clear as crystal, and it proceed out of the throne of God and of the Lamb, which is Messiah, and in the midst of the and on either side of the river there was a tree of life. It wasn't really a tree, okay? It's tree of life again. It relates to the Bible, the Word of God. That's the tree of life. Okay, so if you want life, you study the Bible, you follow God's word. And it bore 12 types of fruit, each tree yielding its fruit every month. And the leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. And I'll stop right there.
But is that the 12 tribes of Israel that it's talking
about? Yes, fundamentally. The 12 tribes of Israel, but it's more like this. If you read Ephesians chapter 2, starting in chapter 2, you're going to find out that the administration of the world is underneath the Jewish authority. Okay? Basically under Messiah. Messiah has, leaders and authorities, and there will be judges and kings. It follows what happens in the Torah, where Moshe, what he does, he calls 70 elders of the people, and he prays over them. They are imparted with the peace of Moshe, and they become what is considered the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin is a Jewish ruling authority. And that authority will happen under Messiah in those days, but the complexity of it, we really don't understand. We don't understand how it will work. The gates, interestingly, it talks about the gates of the city. As you read on, it talks about the gates of the city being made of a single pearl. And then it talks about the fact that there are 24 gates. The 24 gates relate to the 12 tribes of Israel and then to the 12 disciples of Yeshua. Okay? So you have to understand that we're not talking literality, right? So each gate is related to one of the tribes. So you need to understand the tribes, their position, their place, their ideology. And then you also need to understand the 12 disciples, apostles. And then when you understand them, then you realize those are the gates to spirituality. Okay? Now, the reason I bring you here to the Revelation is because of this. Okay? In this 7,000th year, the year that will culminate in the year 7,000, what happens is that there is a development, and there needs to be a repair in the world. Okay, so let's understand this. Adam and Eve sinned inside of the Garden of Eden, right? Okay, so the thing is, are we living in Eden today? No, we're not living in Eden today. But in one sense, everything that God does is like a lawyer. Everything is done in a very legal way. I'm not talking about legalism or anything like that, so don't get there, okay? But God knows that when He created man, one of the things that He intended for man to experience was the spiritual bliss of the Garden of Eden. So in one sense, God has a checklist of things that He has to resolve and things that He has to give back to humanity that were lost by the first man. Okay? So Adam lost the Garden of Eden. He got kicked out of the Garden of Eden. But God intended for all of us to experience Eden. Okay? So this 7,000th year is God's fulfillment of the promise that He makes to humanity, right? And the promise is that we would experience 1,000 years. He says 1,000 years. He doesn't actually say 1,000 years, but nevertheless, the idea is that we will experience the Garden of Eden. Everybody with me? So the beauty of what we will experience in the future is the promise of God, to where we don't have to worry about some fanatic group taking the babies and killing them in the manner that we have recently seen. That will not exist anymore. But the rabbis come to a place where they say that what's going to happen is there will be a cultural shift, to where the shift moves into the process to where we don't have that mentality anymore. Okay? So one guy won't be looking at another guy and say, what color is your skin? Where were you born? All of these different things that cause division in our world today. But everybody will see one another in a way of absolute harmony. One of the things that I enjoy about Star Trek, okay, is the fact that, you know, when you start to read, you start to watch Star Trek, what happens is they talk about a period where humanity just about destroyed itself, and now we're smarter than that, and we have spaceships, and we can go wherever we want to go, okay?
There's no more money.
There's no more money. There's no servants, no et cetera, and there's a lot of problems there, okay? And you should understand that Roddenberry, of course, he was Jewish, and he based his ideology, first of all, on the Talmud, but he followed the ideology also of a man named Chaim Soloman. Chaim Soloman was the guy who designed the American dollar bill. Okay, so when you look at the American dollar bill, you know, you see all these different symbols and signs inside of there. This guy, he literally financed the American Revolution. He was a Jewish. I'm going to say it like this. He was a Jewish spiritual person. He was a Jewish Kabbalist. And he designed it. So therefore, specifically the old dollar bill was designed by him. He had an idea. And he had an idea, one nation under, no. One nation under one God is what he said. But it was too Jewish, so they changed it. Okay? So the idea is that the idea was very Jewish in this, but Gene Roddenberry followed this ideology, one nation, everybody under one authority, under God's authority, under God's rule. And that was what Gene Roddenberry based his ideology on. Now, imagine for a second that we're where we are today, and we possess the knowledge of God that we have right now. Whatever knowledge you have of God right now, that's what you're going to start out with. Okay? Do you know enough about God to say that your knowledge of God could complete this verse where it says that it would cover all of the earth, all of the world, all of the seas? Do we have that much knowledge of God? And look, it's not saying that just everybody will know that there is a God. The people that know and think there's a God, they're far more than the people who actually love and serve God by a long shot. Okay? So then what am I asking? I'm asking, how much do you really know God? Okay, the Jewish sources, back to the idea of what will that 7,000 year period be like, they say it's like this. You and I, I'm going to use me only because of, you know, what I do. And primarily, my whole focus in life is God and my loved one, etc. Those are all the key individual parts of my life. But nevertheless, my life, since I was 14 years old, 15 years old, has been about God and trying to help other people know about God. But I'm going to tell you something. I was going to bring my other Bible in here and show it to you, but the thing is this. I've studied the Bible for over 50 years. And you want to ask me what I know? I've got 4 degrees like Dr. Elizabeth has on the wall. I have a rabbinic ordination. I was ordained a Pekid, etc., etc. And you ask me what I know about God, and I say, nothing. But when I say that I don't know anything, that's because I know how much there is to know about God. And therefore, the summary of what will happen during those 7,000 years is, what's your major hurdle with trying to know and learn God today?
Life.
Having to work, make a living, having dinner. There's nothing wrong with having dinner.
He's freaking out over here. Mm-hmm.
No food? I just told you the trees are for, you know, food. Okay, the idea here is that the rabbis say all the things that are hindrances to our learning God, our becoming more aware of God, will be gone. So imagine every hindrance that gets in the way of you being able to spend time knowing about God, learning God, communicating with God, all of the things that are in relation to God that you want to experience, they'll all be gone.
I had a little lady tell me one time, we called her Miss Happy, and she said, I said, I don't understand. I don't understand. I just kept on, I don't understand. And she was like, child, please don't fret. She said, if God were small enough for us to understand, he wouldn't be big enough to save us. And you'll know all these things one day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's interesting that in the idea is that one of the reasons why we don't try to pronounce that name is because if you could put a title on it, it would make him mundane. And he will never be mundane. He will never be, like you're saying, that little God. Okay? So we say that no matter how much your revelation in this particular era or space of our life, no matter how much you learn, you haven't learned God. You have not learned about God. I shared Thursday night about a guy that it was in Northwest Indiana. He was an Assembly of God preacher. He got kicked out of the Assembly of God organization because he had an idea, and it did not suit the theology of the Assembly of God. So, you know, when somebody gets to the place that they get kicked out of an organization like that, you have to say, you know, was this guy really a heretic, or did he just go beyond their theology? And the answer in this particular situation is he went beyond their theology. Because his idea was that during this 1,000-year period of time, we're going to have one thing that we are involved in, and that is learning God. Now, the reason I brought you here to the end of the book of Revelation, and look at 22 again for just a minute. It says, and he showed me a pure crystal river of water of life, and it was as crystal proceeding from the throne of God and the Lamb. Now, before God can come and tabernacle among us and be there to where, let's say it like this, that you can see God, we're not granted that permission or that right in this life. Because if you see God, you're in the next life. You're not in this one anymore. Okay? But I don't care if that happens, then I'm ready to go. You know what I'm saying? Okay, but the point is here that this is after the 1,000-year period. So in other words, what's happened in that 1,000 years? What has been the development in that 1,000 years?
Got to know God.
Got to know God. To learn and know who God was and what He is and how He will be, etc. So the entire process of our life, when we enter into that stage, will be Sunday school.
Doesn't it also say that we'll know each other the same way?
Oh, absolutely.
That there won't be any hindrances.
Absolutely. And you, one of the things I always tell people when you deal with that particular idea is... So let's suppose, snap your fingers, we're in that period. And you see me. Will it be, and you'll know me. Will it be just because I look like I look right now? And then the question would be, why do I look like I look right now? And the reason why I look like I look is because I'm wearing a spiritual suit. In other words, there's a mold all around me that I have to conform to. So imagine an invisible plastic mold around your body, and your body is like a piece of clay that fills out that mold. That's the spiritual. The plastic is the spiritual world. So that's your spirit is what makes you look like you look right now. Some of you want to...
Can I make mine a little thinner?
Say, God, can we make this with a little less plastic? That's what they call plastic surgery.
That's pretty good.
Okay, so the idea is that your spiritual being, the spiritual person that you are, is what causes you to look the way that you look. Your physical body fills out to the place of your spiritual being. Because you see in Acts chapter 1 verse 8, it talks about the fact that it said, wait in Jerusalem until you be endued with power from on high. That word endued means to be clothed. So if you're clothed with power, it's speaking about spiritual power. Guess what? Your spiritual person is the person that makes you look like the way you look. So now, snap your fingers or wiggle your nose or whatever it is, and we're in that world again. How do we know one another? Because we see the Spirit and we understand the Spirit. But one of the things you have to also do is go back to the time of Adam. When Adam was naming the animals, he didn't look at its physical essence. He looked at its spiritual essence. And he named it according to its spiritual essence. So that is also why you have your name. Your name is your spiritual essence. Your name means the grace of God. David. So, during that period of time, the key idea is this. All that we will be concentrated on, all that we will care about, is learning God. And the reason that I quote verses like Song of Songs, like 1 and 4, where the Shulamite maiden, she says, draw me, we'll run after thee. And what it means is, it's like a lover talking to their lover, saying, allure me, entice me, be enticing. And so we say the same thing to God, But in that period of time, there will be a magnitude, or let's put it like this, not a magnitude, but a magnet that will be drawing us closer to God. And so I say that if you have a relationship with God, which I'm sure every one of you do, otherwise you would be doing something else this morning. If you have a relationship with God and you love God, and when I say you love God, I mean you really have fallen in love with God. And God is a very, very significant portion or part of your life. You have to realize that God is going to be there like a magnet drawing you. Okay, now I'm going to tell you the beginning before the beginning. The Jewish rabbis, they got these bad habits. They say things and then they don't tell you. They do what they call string pearls. So they take a verse out of the Bible and they say, this means this. But they don't give you a whole theological discussion on it. They just say, this means this. And then they just go on. And you're like, wait a minute, I want to know more about that. I want to understand that. So there's a Jewish idea that, you know, I've devoted my life to in the past few years, several years, many years, and that is that the soul is a fragment of God's divine presence. Now, you know, the rabbis say that, and you're going, yeah, the soul is a piece of God. And so you would think that if you and your soul were a piece of God, that you'd have a whole lot more information about God than you do right now. Wouldn't you? If you started out, as I've said in the, I think, the last week or two about Ephesians, where it said you were chosen before the world was even created, before the cosmos was even created. This one lady says, I love being in your classes because we get to go to the stars. And I say, that's nice, but you're not going far enough. We have to go beyond the stars to do like Abraham did. And Abraham did what? He looked down on the stars. He was outside of not just our galaxy, the entire cosmos. He was outside of it.
Laura said like Star Trek.
Like Star Trek. Actually, beyond Star Trek. Because Star Trek is still going to the stars, going to the different galaxies, etc. But beyond that. But here's my point. You started off as this spark with God in some infinite place where the revelation of God that you had was unbelievable. There were no restrictions to what you knew about God. You experience God by being right there in His presence. It's possible to do that even today, but you have to learn how to communicate with your spiritual being, the spiritual person that you are. And sometimes, as I've said that as a week or so ago, where it comes as a still, small voice that speaks from the inside. But here's the thing. We started out as this spark of God, and then as a spark of God, we're sent to be where we are right now. But Adam is the one who came up with an idea, and he said that what he was going to do was, when he became human, his head was in the heavens, we said, and his feet were on the earth. He said he was going to relegate himself only to the earth and lose all the knowledge of God. Somebody give me a hammer.
Retard.
She got her. That one wasn't the chill pill.
She's a hybrid.
Does a shoe work?
Whatever works.
Steel toed.
But what he decided that we would do was that we would go to the farthest limits away from God, and then we would return. We would come back. Based on something that we commonly understand and call absence makes the heart grow fonder. And so, what will happen in this 7,000 year period is that all of the veils, all of the things that have been put in place for us to hide God. Why did God hide himself, or why is God hidden? The reason he's hidden so we can be exactly what we are right now. And so that we could have free will. Say again.
But to have the desire to search for him.
Exactly. And so the search will be exponentially accelerated once we start into those days. And so during that frame of time, the thing that we have tried so hard to understand in our life as it exists right now, the thing that we wanted so desperately will become a reality. And it will birth, and it will expand to the place of reading what we read in Revelation. God is the core. He's the center. And we will need no tabernacle. We won't need any church. We won't need any synagogue. God will be right there, and that's what we will begin to worship. And that's what we'll serve. So I have many more notes that will be posted on the web, but that is the summation. Know that for 1,000 years, you're going to be bathing in the knowledge of God without any restriction like we know it and understand it today. Those things will be removed.